ACP and ACR programs for feed grains alone. And the federal monetary payments for Idaho in 1984 amounted to $49,365,328 for just these two programs. In addition, there were dairy price supports and federal money spent in Idaho for storing surplus dairy products. Also, federal money is spent for the purpose of supporting the price of the domestic sugar market over the world price of sugar. To illustrate, according to the January 31st, 1985 issue of the Wall Street Journal, the domestic price for November domestic sugar was 21.45 cents a pound. The price of October sugar on the world market was 5.62 cents a pound, or 15.83 cents a pound less. In other words, the American taxpayer was subsidizing domestic produced sugar on July 31, 1985 to the tune of 3.82 times the value of sugar on the open world market. Furthermore, in light of the present gigantic federal deficit, all Americans, whether they be engaged in agriculture or not, should be content with making a living and a profit on their investment by selling their products on the open market. Thus, it makes absolutely no economic sense to put more public lands or private dry lands into production by way of irrigation using Snake River water or water from the Snake River Plain Aquifer during a period of depressed agricultural conditions. Thus, it should be the policy of the board to protect the present family farmers from the economic pressures which will be caused by more surplus farm crops and much, much higher pump irrigation electrical rates. And there is testimony on record now at the office of the Idaho Public Utilities Commission to the effect that in an increase in electrical pumping rates will have a severe financial impact on the profitability of many, many farmers in Idaho Power Company's Idaho territory. Nearly a quarter million ratepayers who have little or no vested interest in Idaho agricultural enterprises will be adversely affected by increased electrical rates from the time this legislation is implemented to eternity. See our exhibit number 8, Policy 32D, Hydropower. We certainly agree that reducing the Snake River flows below 3,900 CFS in the 7 irrigation months and 5,600 CFS in the remaining 5 months of the year is not in the public interest, and that hydropower use be recognized as a beneficial use of water. However, we very strongly disagree with the premise that reducing the 8,400 CFS flows of Idaho Power Company with the Swan Falls Dam to 3,900 CFS is in the public interest. Furthermore, we offer our exhibits number 1 and 2 to support our position that the minimum flow of water for any month of the year should not be set lower than 6,065 CFS, as this is the average minimum daily flow for 1961 through 1983. To pick out a single solitary day out of the entire time since water records have been kept for Murphy beginning in August 1913 is manifestly unfair. It also substantiates the position of many, including us, that irrigation pumpers were pumping water from the Snake River for which they had no valid water right. According to our and others' views regarding the 1983 Idaho Supreme Court decision number 49, upholding Idaho Power Company's water right for 8,400 CFS at Swan Falls. In addition, we offer our exhibit number 2 as showing that the average instantaneous flow of the Snake at Murphy for 1961 through 1984 on July the 1st was 9,208 CFS, or 2.3 times the 3,900 CFS proposed during this same period of time. Even the lowest instantaneous flow at any time of the year, averaged from 1961 through 1983, was 5,616 CFS at Murphy, which is 1.44 times the 3,900 CFS proposed during the 7 summer or irrigation months, and slightly over the proposed 5,600 CFS proposed for the other 5 months of the year. See our exhibit number 6. Policy 32E, Navigation. We support the premise that water sufficient for commercial and recreational navigation be provided by minimum flows for the Snake River. However, based on the fact that on July 1st, 1977, only 3,111 CFS would have entered Browning Reservoir if the Snake River tributaries below Swan Falls had comparable flow inflows into the Snake as they did on July 1st, 1977. The boating and fishing in Browning Reservoir will be severely impacted if the reservoir is drawn down to generate electrical power. Also under this condition, we feel the Hells Canyon National Recreational Area, as well as the Wild and Scenic River reach of the Snake River from Hells Canyon Dam to Lewiston will be severely impacted because the outflow of the Snake River at Hells Canyon Dam on July the 29th, 1977 was only 5560 CFS, whereas the flow at Murphy was 5790 CFS, thus reducing the flow at Hells Canyon another 1,890 CFS, the difference between 5790 and 3,900 CFS will not meet the 5,000 CFS minimum flow requirement at Johnson Bar. Policy 32F, aquaculture. We realize agriculture is a growing industry in Idaho, and this is one reason we previously stated that the 150 CFS additional, or DCMI, use should be increased. However, we believe that some control over the water quality of the water discharged from the fish farm should be made. Policy 32G, Fish, Wildlife, Recreation. This is the section of the changes in Policy 32 in which we are in very strong disagreement with the proposed 3,900 CFS minimum flow at Murphy. As previously stated, there is no scientific evidence that 3,900 CFS will maintain the fish and wildlife habitat in the reaches of the Snake River below Swan Falls to Browning Reservoir. We expressly call the board's attention to the 1975-1976 Snake River Stream Resource Management Maintenance Flow Studies, pages 12 through 14, which state that the minimum flow requirements for maintaining rearing flows for fish food production are as follows. Swan Falls Dam to Bernard's Ferry for all months of the year, 5,500 CFS. Also, there is white sturgeon in the reach, and this species is now one of special concern to the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Hence, a drastic reduction to 3,900 CFS or 1,600 CFS reduction will undoubtedly place this species on the threatened species list for this reach of the Snake River. Bernard's Ferry to Boise River mouth for all months of the year, 5,100 CFS. This reach of the river also contains white sturgeon, which will become a threatened species in this reach. In addition, the reduced flows will make possible land bridges to the islands in this reach. Same applies to the Swan Falls to Bernard's Ferry reach, and the Canada geese and other waterfowl, as well as upland game birds, will suffer animal predation and human harassment and disturbance. Boise River mouth to Payette River mouth for all months of the year, 5,650 CFS. The waterfowl, upland game birds, and animal wildlife in this reach, such as mink, beaver, and muskrat, will suffer animal predation and human harassment and disturbance. Payette River mouth to Browning flow line, all months of the year, 5,850 CFS. Consequently, a reduction in river flows of Murphy to 3,900 CFS will severely impact the fish, wildlife, and waterfowl, as well as upland game birds in this Snaker River reach as well. The board's attention is respectfully called to the attention the Snake River has been known as a very valuable fishing stream for nearly 100 years, and not the least known fish is the white sturgeon, which become threatened if these proposed reductions in the Snake River flows take place. We are submitting our exhibit number 3, which is an official list of Idaho's record fish, as well as a narration regarding the sturgeon story by Marshall Edson, exhibit number 4 of 2 pages, which will substantiate our statement. Also, we are submitting a document of 2 pages, our exhibit number 5 of 2 pages, which is a copy of a document submitted by Director A. Kenneth Dunn to the January 1984 meeting of the Idaho Water Resource Board, which states at the bottom of page 1, quote, effect on fishery, quote, loss of nearly all the sturgeon habitat upstream from Hills Canyon, end quote. In addition, in item 6A, last line, quote, 55.3 million capital and fixed O&M plus 26.3 million fuel costs plus 28 million hydropower losses minus 43.8 million power plant sales for new irrigation lands equals 65.8 million increased cost of electricity. Therefore, the evidence is overwhelming that the proposed reduction in the snake flows at 2,3900 CFS and Murphy will have a devastating effect on the white sturgeon, causing a loss of nearly all its habitat, and will have a most serious financial impact on the ratepayers, all classes of the Idaho Power Company. Does the board desire to see an annual financial impact of 65.8 million increase in Idaho Power Company's ratepayers, including the irrigation class of Idaho Power Company's ratepayers? If not, then the minimum flow of the Snake River should be set much higher, at least to the minimum flows that save the sturgeon fishery. 5525 CFS is the average of the flows required to maintain the food supply of the sturgeon from Swan Falls to the mouth of the Bounty Reservoir. Policy 32H, water quality and pollution control. We do not agree that the use of water to provide pollution dilution is not a beneficial use of water. The chemical fertilizers used by farmers which enter the return flows of the snake can have a non-beneficial effect on the water quality of the river, especially for domestic use. And there are some valid water right withdrawals from the Snake River for domestic use on the Oregon side of the river. In addition, the silt entering the Snake River from the farms along the Snake River, especially in the spring and low water years, is very pronounced. In fact, it is stated that before the Salmon Falls hydro-generating projects were built, that there were very few islands in the Snake River below Salmon Falls. Policy 32I, new storage. We have no problem with this section as stated in our copy of the text. Policy 32J, stored water for management purposes. We have no problem with this section as stated in our copy of the text. We propose a new section, 32K. Idaho should do more to increase its share of the U.S. and world recreational and tourist market, noting especially the economic value of this market to the state of Idaho and the Snake River fishing, hunting, boating, camping, and even raptor watching are ever increasing annually, which is a very beneficial economic multiplier to all Idaho. In the addendum, we propose policy 32K, program to protect, mitigate, and enhance fish and wildlife in compliance with section 4A1 of the Pacific Northwest Electric Power Council's purposes and recommendation under the Act. We propose that this new policy, since a very large part of the anadromous fish runs of the Pacific Northwest, including Idaho, have been badly depleted. In fact, anadromous fish runs have been totally eliminated in the Snake River upstream from Idaho Power Company's Hills Canyon dams. Respectfully submitted, Idaho Wildlife Federation, Idaho Consumer Affairs, Inc., and the Golden Eagle Audubon Society. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Mr. Williams, questions?
None.
I have none.
I have none, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Now the board will call Mrs. Hayes. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. How many more with me?
Gentlemen, I would like to thank you for the opportunity of appearing before you this afternoon. I'm Marjorie Geddes Hayes at 7440 Manorwood Drive, and I'm speaking to you on behalf of the consumer at this hearing. My testimony is an adjunct to that of Mr. Harold Miles, whose research has clearly demonstrated the validity of Idaho Power's right at Swan Falls. We do not feel that it is in the public interest for the 3900 CFS to be established at Swan Falls from April 1st to October 31st, or the 5600 CFS from November 1st to March 31st. Our reason for this conclusion was established by my great-grandfather, William Geddes, and is on file in the Weber County Courthouse in Utah. It is called the Geddes Law and pertains to first in line, last in use. This law protects the first established water claims from the taking process by those who file at a later date above their claims. It is our contention that the Idaho Power Company has a valid right to the full 6,065 CFS, which has been established as the average minimum daily discharge at the gauging station at Murphy under this old accepted Western law. It is also, in our opinion, decidedly in the best interest of the general public for this right to be maintained for the protection of a healthy hydropower system at Brownlee, for without this hydro base, our rates will soar. This has been clearly established by the very fine study that was done by the University of Idaho's economists Lyman and Hamilton, with which you're all familiar, and many others. The Corps of Army Engineers did a study that, in essence, validates the Lyman-Hamilton study. There is another excellent reason that this water right should not be aborted, which should be given your full attention before taking any action whatsoever. This is the exciting new concept that is being considered by the Bonneville Power Administration at this time. The Bonneville Power Administration, under Peter Johnson, Administrator, has presented us with a plan that will release preference power, this is the cheaper power, from BPA to the investor-owned utilities. Idaho Power Company is one. This preference power will be used by the investor-owned utilities to meet their own firm loads. In other words, they will use the Bonneville power for us consumers, the irrigators, etc., whom they are now servicing. They will then be able to sell their own power to California on a firm contract basis. To protect the continuation of the cheap BPA power to the Idaho consumer, I have suggested that the firm power contract with California be of the same duration as the BPA preference power contracts with the investor-owned utilities. A condition of the exchange of power would be that the money realized from the firm contract sales to California, 5 cents to 9 cents a kilowatt hour, will be used to super insulate every house and mobile home in the Northwest. It is the opinion of the Idaho Consumer Affairs Incorporated that this should be done free of charge. For the preference power that will be used to make this plan possible has already been purchased with the tax dollars used to build the generating resource. The insulation program will not only supply a source of new energy, it will do a good neighbor turn for California, for they can then mothball their oil-fired plants and replace the lost energy with our clean, non-polluting hydropower. In doing this, it can also revitalize our own economy. A report released by the Northwest Conservation Act Coalition shows the result of a study by the A. Bainbridge Island, Washington firm of H. Glenn Sims and Associates. They show that over the lifetime of houses built in a 10-year study period, the region would increase its employment by more than 180,000 job years. Building the better insulated homes would provide more jobs than building thermal plants. So would production and sale of the products that go into the homes. The money saved by the homeowners and spent for other purposes would also generate more jobs, according to the study. This study estimates that the model homes built to conservation standards would save the region's ratepayers over $1.26 billion because the energy costs much less to conserve than to produce. Bear in mind that this does not take into account what will be realized from the super insulation of older homes, houses, and mobile homes, as is planned with the preference power from Bonneville Power Administration, A study is now underway at Hood River, Oregon, that will show the extent of the savings from this plan. Both frontal attacks to super-insulate old and future homes will give us the needed capital to pay for our schools, our social programs, our roads, our fire departments, and our service organizations, for the plan is to use materials purchased in the Pacific Northwest. To pursue this plan, we will need hydropower. For a California Energy Commissioner, whom I listened to at a meeting in Seattle, specifically requested hydropower, not thermal, for this exchange with the investor-owned utilities. It is therefore imperative that we do not jeopardize our hydro base with the passage of the Swan Falls Agreement and diminish our prospects to bring scarce capital into a region that is struggling at the legislature to make too little capital go too far. I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, any questions?
No.
No. Mr. Rideau?
I have none.
Mr. Kramer?
I have none.
Board calls standing break.
For me and Betty F.
Board would call Jack Streeter.
Gentlemen of the Idaho Water Resources Board, my name is Jack Streeter from Mountain Home, Idaho. I represent the Southwest Idaho Development Association, the Sagebrush Rebellion, and my grandkids and their grandkids. And I'm here to speak to the proposition that water in Idaho has got to be handled in a manner that it will be available for our posterity for all types of uses. It is appalling when you can see on the TV every day that millions upon millions of people are starving to death. Farmers are going broke every day. We experienced a spiral in inflation here where land went from $2 to $4 to $6 to $12 to $2,400 an acre. Bankers lent money on the spiral of inflation, and now we're going through a depression or a deflation, and this ground is going out of production. Now that would lead you to believe that maybe we should give our water away, but that is definitely wrong. There will come a time, and there are energy sources available today to make some of these things more feasible, and they will become more feasible when the demand exists. The farmer used to buy fuel at 21 cents, a good tractor for $15,000, and he used to sell his crops at a profit. I used to pay $18 for lifting water that now costs about $60. The utilization of all energy sources have to be considered. We have the technology today to help us do this in lots of manners. First of all, the Pacific Northwest, the West in general, and Idaho most particularly, is remiss in the development of hydroelectric energy and upstream storage for generations that will need it, and that will come a lot faster than you think. We should be planning for that. I feel that Idaho Power has a right to a fair share of water, but in my opinion, it is a use right and not a consumptive right. I feel sure that the only reason we have been able, with the help of you gentlemen, to hammer out some sort of a compromise is because that Idaho Power knows that the old mining contract that they had for that water right is pretty shaky, and I'm sure their lawyers have told them if you take it to the highest court of the land, you will lose. So this compromise is definitely in their best interest and not necessarily in the best interest of the people. You and I both know that when your plan goes in front of this legislature, the lobbyists will chip away at it just as hard as they can. And what lobbyists am I talking about? Idaho Power's lobbyists. I want to give you this, and I hope you will put it in your records, to show you that there are energy sources available. That little piece of paper comes from a restricted government report. It's about 27 pages long. And here in Idaho, we have hot water that is superheated steam. It would run an awful lot of generators, and Idaho Power is trying to break the law where they have to buy generation brought to their lines by individuals. If we would slurry coal, and there's several ways to do that, and it's here in the West, easily available, where you take coal and make it almost like a face powder and put a low-grade crude on it and put it into a blast furnace, it's amazing the BTUs you can get from that energy. Our energy crisis is somewhat put on, as we all have begun to realize. I'm here to lobby, and I'll be frank about it, in the best interest of the people of Idaho, to save Idaho's water and its electrical generation for use and development here. And to that end, I have dedicated a great amount of my time and energy. And I feel that you gentlemen must be very wary when you go in with your plan to see that you don't lose part of it, and you ought to fight for more of it. And I'm on your side, but I think you should have had a bigger hunk to start with. Thank you very much. May I invite you to the 20th annual meeting of the Southwest Idaho Development Association, where we will discuss off-stream storage, energy, and energy alternatives. It's all coupled together, gentlemen. And we'd like to see you there.
Any questions of Mr. Streeter?
I have none.
Mr. Reynolds? Mr. Kramer?
I have none. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Board would call Fred Stewart.
Records show that Mr. Stewart has given the board a copy of Currents, November 1984 issue.
And then I gave you two handouts, Mr. Chairman. I have another one, but I don't have a copy for each one, so if I could give it to you, it's a three-page handout. I don't have enough for each one. I thought I did. I don't.
Thank you. The board has received a copy of Idaho Code, paragraph 42-245, which is underlined, 42-247, which has notations, and a letter to Fred Stewart from David R. Tuthill, Supervisor, Water Allocation Section, Department of Water Resources, dated January 31, 1985.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Fred Stewart. I live on Hunt Project, north of Eden, a few miles north of the member Mr. Shaver there. I hope you forgive me for my cold. As a night I can wear my nightcap that my wife makes, in the daytime I can wear a cap, but when you come in a drafty building, I'm going to have to adopt Jim's formula for keeping my head warm. My God, it's real rough, so I really had a terrible head cold.
The record show Mr. Shaver's blushing.
No, I wasn't aware of that. I complimented Jim that he looked a lot younger than his father did in the picture here a couple of weeks ago, and wondered how he kept looking so young, and he says, well, you can purchase any look you want. And so I'm going to look for the same vendor. If I could get rid of my glasses and put one of them on and get some false teeth, maybe I could appear to be 20 years younger. I don't know.
Well, could we get to policy 32?
A little background, gentlemen, is I know up the state capitol here, they placed a lot of stress on papers on the wall saying what kind of lawyer you are, this or that, the other. Is my education was engineering training, civil and agriculture. I was a classmate of Professor Cal Warnick. I've made a fairly good success in farming. Also, I'm a real estate broker. I have my own real estate brokerage, International Real Estate Brokerage. So I'm quite able to handle contracts and things. The handout that I gave you there is also the first page of the handout that I handed the chairman ahead of time, and it has to do with policy number 70, the adjudication, which is all part of the package. If I understand, is this limited strictly to your policy 32?
We would prefer, Mr. Stewart.
I think it's interwoven here to this extent.
You can tie it to policy 32, that'd be fine.
Tie it to the agreement and the contract, and then back to policy 32. I think it's something that has to be addressed real quickly, because as it states here, and it's codified 42-245, as failure to file claims and relinquish right by June the 30th of this year, you're going to have 24,000 people that's going to be sitting out there in the cold, and that's something that is done there. Var Chaperon assured me here 3 weeks ago today that they do something about that. They have done something to help alleviate that. Now, the figure I got there is from the third page of the handout that I've given you, Mr. Chairman. It's to myself from Mr. Tuthill there in response to my request, and I'd like to read it to the rest of the board. It says, pursuant to your request, I've tabulated the number of claims to water rights received since the Idaho Water Claims Program began on July 1st, 1978. The number received between that date and December 31st, 1984 is 8,942. This compares with an estimate of 34,000 claimed water rights computed to be required statewide. Now, the second page there is taken out of the State Water Plan 1976. There alludes to 250,000 water rights, which also includes a domestic. Now, the provision there, domestic, is a single family dwelling of a half acre. And so how many you got between the 34,000 and the 200,000? Probably it'd be a wild guess by anybody, but in any event, gee, this is a real serious matter that really has to be there. You're going to have 25,000 people that could all of a sudden, or will be, chopped off, because when adjudication starts, they'll start with the recorded water rights. And so certainly it hasn't been a success, because of 34,000, you've only had that many people. But, and so that addresses your adjudication part of it, which is your 70 and 71. Now, in response to my comments at a water resource meeting 2 weeks ago, they brought in House Bill 71, which allows for expansion, and which would meet some of those. And what I warned the people there, all the irrigators there, is that some of the people maybe had 80 acres with 80 shares of water, and another 50 acres adjoined in a dry ground, and they had put a sprinkler on, so they had expanded the right, but they hadn't recorded it. So the following Monday, Pat Cole and Pat Costello had a Bill 71 there before the House Resource Committee, and I think it's a good bill because it allows for expansion on these rights. But I think that they should also have a bill in there that allows somehow. Now, the State Water Board, this is how the State Water Board, State Water Plan, the verbiage was. Now, in the correction that the House Concurrent Bill 48 gave, it gave some relief in there so that a person would not be cut out. And something has got to be done, or we're going to have chaos in the state come 1st of July. But to drop back there to the other, to my handout there, gentlemen, is a there is, in so far as the agreement is, I made as clear as I could in there, and you can pursue my written statement there at your leisure, is that, that I think this agreement should be scrapped. Because it will tend to allow the exportation of every drop of the state Snake River water above the Hells Canyon Reach. And you have to pursue through the State Water Plan, the Swan Falls 1, the House Concurrent Resolution 48, and the contract and the agreement. It's like you walk into a friend's house and the kids are on the floor, they got 1,000 piece jigsaw puzzle, and you can look at that forever and not see it unless it's put together, and that's, but it's real simple. And I've got in this handout, I've got a letter plat here, it's has the map showing the hydro plants of Idaho Power. The three lower dams are subordinated, and there I'd like to refer to the single page handout that I gave each one of the board members, and that's the final conclusionary remark of Justice Shepherd. That's a single page handout, gentlemen. Is in Swan Falls 1, and he'd gone on for several pages in his opinion there to point out that the FPC, along with the state, that insisted on subordination of these three lower dams. Now, in this conclusionary, he's speaking about utilities oversee of these three lower dams, and I've underlined there, it says, with respect to the status requiring Public Utilities Commission approval of transfer of utility property, we hold that the statutes do not apply to water rights subordinated when acquired, nor do they apply to water rights which have been abandoned or forfeited. Now that's your three lower dams down there. That's over three quarters of their hydro generation, 1,345,000 kW. All the other hydro plants comes to 446,000 kW. Now by the terms of the agreement, all the plants, including Swan Falls and up above, will be unsubordinated. That's part of the agreement. It works in there already. It's unsubordinate. CJ Strike in particular in Twin Falls. Is in Senate Bill 1005. Do you gentlemen all have that? I've been working with the legislature, so I refer more to the bills that's implementing these policies there. 1005 is the bill that is before the Senate right now that says we, the legislature, approve of the contract, which the contract then approves of the agreement. Is once that's approved, then this thing is locked in. Is the second part of 1005 refers to the Public Utilities Commission's jurisdiction. That's speaking of their jurisdiction from Swan Falls up. Now, you've just read where they have no jurisdiction. No utility will have any jurisdiction at Brownlee Dam. That's the conclusionary statement of Justice Shepherd. Now, the Public Utility Commission, Idaho Public Utility Commission, will also not have any jurisdiction from Swan Falls up as part of this agreement. The agreement said that the Public Utility Commission would either do it voluntarily or they'd be directed to by the utilities. This bottom part of your 1005 is is addressing that, is taking their jurisdiction away from Idaho Power. Now, your bill 1008 is your policy 32, only in the bill form. Is you know, you make these policies, and I've seen that over the years, the policies in state water board is made, and then it goes to the legislature, and as they verbalize it, sometimes the meaning changes. And there, but over on page, on section two, it says the legislature finds and declares that it is in the public interest to specifically implement the state's power to regulate and limit the use of water for power purposes. But that does not apply to Idaho Power. It does not apply to Idaho Power. Is the Idaho Power submitted to the statement to the Senate Resource and Environmenting Committee on January the 25th, and that's what they say, the Idaho Power Company is not required by Swan Falls Agreement to support Section 2 of Senate Bill 1008. Found on that page that I just read. Is it? Their rights are unsubordinated with the implementation of 1005, then they don't have anybody saying, hey, you got to do like you've done for, you might say, for John Peavy to protect your hydro flow. Now, in your agreement, if you can turn to your agreement there, it's found on either issue of the current there, it's under the Swan Falls Agreement. It's under paragraph 6E. You can find it in either paper there of the agreement. And that's at the bottom of the second column, 6E, or 7E, pardon me, gentlemen, 7E. It says, company's ability to purchase, lease, own, or otherwise acquire water from sources upstream of its power plant and convey it to and past its power plants below Miller and Dam shall not be limited by this agreement. Such flows shall be considered fluctuations resulting from operation of company facilities. Then drop back up to the bottom of 7B, the last paragraph there, or the last sentence there. Next to the last, it says, any fluctuations resulting from the operation of company facility shall not be considered in the calculation of the minimum daily stream flow set forth herein. And what this does, gentlemen, is it opens the door to taking every drop of Idaho's water out of the Snake River Basin above Hell's Canyon. Is in my handout, there is a copy of what's known as the Modified Snake Colorado Plan to convey water from the backwaters of the Brownlee down to Owens Valley and also into Lake Mead. It gives the hydrology of it. And they've got a bill before the Congress right now to terminate the last 4 years of the church 40-year moratorium. 77, they sent to the legislature in California did a resolution to attach the Snake River now. Is the Central Arizona project is going to be completed next year. At that time, Arizona is going to take half of California's adjudicated right in the Colorado. Is they have an empty tube at Owens Valley. As you know, at the turn of the century, they devastated Owens Valley and took all the water out of the valley, the surface water. 15 years ago, they poked another hole through and drilled a whole series of wells up and down the valley and sucked the subwater out. And in doing so, they started killing a lot of the vegetation on the surrounding public ground. And so the Sierra Club stopped them, so they got an empty tube there. A large group of people, Karstrom, that got the water out of Owens River Valley now own 99% of all that valley. It's become a vacation mecca. If they could replace that water, it'll be worth multi-billions to them. You're talking money down there. A neighbor of mine, his brother's building a road for Lawrence Welk up to